It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Gentrification issues are nothing new to Pittsburgh, but the effects of gentrification and neighborhood change are becoming more and more profound in this city as people with low to moderate incomes find it more challenging to find affordable housing and longtime residents watch their corner taverns turn into upscale eateries. My next guest is a former Pittsburgher and San Diego State University professor who has written a play set in a fictional Southside bar that claims to address the issues of neighborhoods in transition. It's called Repulsing the Monkey, and there will be a staged reading of the play on Wednesday and Thursday nights this week at the Pitt School of Social Work. I'm joined now in studio by the author of the play, Michael Eichler. Michael, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Mary Omer. She's with the Pitt School of Social Work. Mary, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. Michael Eichler, explain the timing behind this and how you came up with the idea for Repulsing the Monkey.
Having lived in Pittsburgh through the 70s and 80s, moved away and came back for a little trip and a little vacation, and I was really shocked to see how much Pittsburgh had changed. Some of the neighborhoods that I was familiar with when I lived here a while ago, Lawrenceville, East Liberty, the South Side itself, almost look like they're another city, and they really changed. So living in Southern California, where I've been for the last 16 years, the changes that occurred there happened very quickly. And if you live in San Diego or San Francisco now, there's not a single neighborhood left in those cities that a working-class person can afford to live in. People live 40, 50 miles away from those cities and have to commute to jobs that don't pay a lot of money, and they virtually lost the communities that they used to belong to. And seeing the changes, not to the same extent here, but seeing the beginning of these changes occur, I thought that Pittsburgh as a setting for this issue was very applicable, and we might be able to use a play as a real vehicle to begin to address this issue from a policy point of view.
And I had a question here on my list where I was going to mention the fact that, you know, you were at San Diego State, you've retired to pursue playwriting, and, right, and you've continued to live in sunny California. So why not set the issues of gentrification, which are even more acute there? Why not set this story in a city that you're living in?
Because Pittsburgh, I believe, has such a uniqueness to it, such a feel for working people, such a history to it, that there is not a better place in the country to dramatize this issue than Pittsburgh itself.
Simply because of this idea that, you know, you look at the South Side and how it's changed. When the mills were up and running, what was happening on Carson Street was, I'm sure, even though I didn't experience it personally, I can imagine from what I've heard and read that it was very different then than what it is now.
Right.
Is that part of it, the fact that we're still seeing the transition happen, whereas in a place like California, it's pretty much a done deal?
Yes, that's right. It's really, I'll give you an example. In San Francisco now, what was a historically working-class neighborhood, not a neighborhood with fancy Victorian homes or landed gentry that lived there a century ago. These are very modest houses, the Mission District in San Francisco.
Sure.
The average rent now for an efficiency apartment throughout the Mission District, not all of San Francisco, only this working-class neighborhood, efficiency apartments, average rent, $2,900, one bedroom, $3,700 per month. 30% of all apartments in the Mission District are advertised on Airbnb for tourists to come in and subsidize the amount of rent that people have to pay to live there. A new employee in his 20s from Amazon said, "I only make $100,000 a year. I wish I could afford to live in the Mission District." Now, you hear stories like that. A play talking about that problem is basically irrelevant. But it is not irrelevant here. You still have the chance to have a mix of people and a vibrant city with newcomers and people who were born and raised here. And that would make a truly great city. And I think there's still an opportunity to do that in Pittsburgh.
And 412-246-2002 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. We'd like to hear your story about how gentrification, how some of these neighborhood development issues have impacted you. What might you contribute to a dramatization or a staged work about this issue? And Mary, I will get to the tie-in with the Pitt School of Social Work. But now that we've identified what the issue is, and there are various ways that you can examine it as someone who has studied sociology. But you've chosen to step away from that and approach it in something that deals with it in a more visceral and emotional way, which as only drama can do. But why all of a sudden, Michael? How did you arrive at this way of addressing this issue?
It's a personal thing. My wife was very ill about 5 years ago, and in the course of her illness, if you're the spouse, of course, you feel helpless. And I wrote down on a yellow pad a scene that I had, an idea in my head about what happens when a husband and wife who are in love have the doctor come in and tell you whatever the news is going to be. And before the doctor comes in, they reflect on their life. So I just had this story written. And I was walking down the street in a gentrified neighborhood in San Diego, and I looked up and there was a theater, and it said 10-minute plays contest, enter. So I did, and it won.
Wow.
And then I wrote another one, and it won. And then a couple of years ago, was nominated as an emerging playwright. And
figured you had the hang of it.
I had the hang of it, yes. So it's a combination of some ability in that, and the idea that a fresh idea that you could take some of these issues that I was very concerned about and use the arts, in this case theater, as a way to address it, and in maybe a more effective way.
Okay, so we've got a situation where the price of things is what the market will bear, and rents have gone up. So somebody might look at this on the surface and say, big deal. Mm-hmm. So where does the emotion come in? Where does the human cost of gentrification come in, and how do you dramatize that?
In the play, not to give it away, but in the play, a brother and sister inherit the bar because their parents have passed away. And coming from Pittsburgh and living on the slopes, they looked at this bar as something from the past that they were not interested in. They're in their 30s. But they're squeezed now because they own this bar and can't operate it, have no ability to do it, but realize, oh, this could be good for us because people from out of town might pay a lot of money for it and we could sell it. And a couple from New York, from Williamsburg and Brooklyn, come. And a couple from L.A. come and look at the property. And, of course, they don't want to keep it as a bar. They want to change it into new uses. And this makes the brother and sister reflect on their life, reflect on their parents' life, reflect on the neighborhood, and reflect on how these changes in Pittsburgh are going to affect them. And I do think it's much more effective to talk about this problem in human terms than it is statistically or through broad kind of policy statements. And so breaking this down to one family on the South Side slopes and their history and their connection to the neighborhood seemed to me to be a good vehicle to look at this issue.
And so why is it called Repulsing the Monkey? How did you come up with that title?
Living in Southern California, of course, I now take Tai Chi lessons.
Of course,
you have to.
Is that what everybody in California does?
You go down a park, and that's what they're doing all day, basically. All right. Don't do anything else. And one of these movements have names, and one is Repulsing the Monkey. And the L.A. Person in the play wants to change the bar into a Tai Chi studio. And in the course of this, the double entendre of repulsing the monkey,
sure,
and it being a move seemed to make a lot of sense. So, of course, this play did run in San Diego and sold out for 6 performances. And when the Tai Chi instructor in the play comes out, I had my real Tai Chi instructor in the audience. And he couldn't stop laughing watching a Southern Californian coming to Pittsburgh to change the building into a Tai Chi studio.
And can you strike that pose? Do you know how to do that?
Can I? Yes,
well,
I can.
I'm going to ask
this
our
radio
assistant producer. Well, here's how we make this work visually. I'm going to ask our assistant producer, Katie. Do you have your camera over there? I'm going to have Michael.
It's the first.
I'm going to have Michael stand up and strike. Or no, she's going to come around. Actually, I think so. I'm going to have you stand up and strike the repulsing the monkey pose, while while we turn to Mary here.
Oh.
Okay.
And while I reset and tell everybody that it's Essential Pittsburgh and we're talking about the play Repulsing the Monkey with the author Michael Eichler, who is in town for a stage reading of the play, which will occur at the University of Pittsburgh on Wednesday and Thursday nights. Go ahead and stand up, Michael. Don't be bashful.
Hey.
And for those of you wondering what's happening, you'll get to see this on our website later and fill in all the blanks. Now, Mary Omer, who is with the Pitt School of Social Work, this is something that you have chosen to stage as at the school, and it ties in with issues that, you address and research and confront as part of your work in academia. But what led you to want to say that this is the venue to do this?
Well, Mike and I actually went to school together and graduated from Pitt in 1986, actually, when the river community study was going on at Pitt and all the mills were closing. And we worked together doing organizing for years. And I just need to comment on, he was one of the best storytellers I've ever heard in my life and would captivate audiences and get them engaged around issues as an organizer like no one I've ever seen. And so when he approached me, I just came back to Pittsburgh myself about a year ago, having been in Atlanta for 10 years teaching. And I noticed the changes. And I had to find a house. And I had a hard time actually finding a house that I could afford. And I'm not poor. So it was a perfect opportunity. He approached myself and Professor Tracy Soska, who is the chair of our community organizing and social action concentration at the school, about could we do this as a partnership and raise awareness around these issues and engage our students, because it's very important to us that we actually give our students not only researching the issues, but acting on them and giving them an opportunity to do something. And so there were really kind of three things that came together. One, the COSA concentration itself at the school's interest because of Jim Cunningham, our former professor. We're trying to raise awareness about his legacy and support for students through his endowment that he started with his wife. In 2006, to the Year of the Humanities at Pitt, which allowed us to partner with Theater Arts on this project. And three, our students actually giving them an opportunity through their community organizing class to actually do something about it.
And what has been the reaction from the students, you know, the idea that this this play is coming up and is going to be at least, if not put on its feet, at least, put out into the atmosphere at the Pitt School of Social Work this week?
Well, I think at first, and Carly is here and she could say something about that, at first they were a little intimidated about, well, why are we doing theater? We're trying to learn organizing, right? And what's our role? And we've never done this, promoted a play before, and how does that lead to the issue? And so, but now they are very excited. As we get more in closer to the play, they've done their research. And they've gone out to interview. First, they interviewed changemakers in all the different neighborhoods across the city. They videotaped those, shared those with each other, and discussed what issues came about out of those interviews that they wanted to focus on in the dialogue for the play. They've done all the PR and marketing and on the ground, literally walking through neighborhoods, putting out postcards, talking to people, reaching out, doing what organizers do, and then also actually helping with the logistics with the play. And they had to do a proposal. We are a university, and they did have to research the issues both nationally and locally. And they have actually structured the questions in the way that they want the dialogue to go after the play. The students have done that.
And this is one of your students.
Yes,
right
it
here.
Is.
So why don't we slide the mic over, because we're microphone challenged here. But we can share. And so if you want to push that a little closer and introduce your student to us here.
Okay, this is Carly Catone.
Okay.
And she is a Master's of Social Work student in the COSA, which is Community Organizing and Social Action concentration. And she's one of 13 students in my community organizing class who's worked on this project.
Okay, and Carly, why don't you step up to the mic there? First of all, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Talk about this research that you did and tell us some of what you learned.
So one of the biggest components of our research project not only was researching the change in gentrification and community development throughout the United States and in Pittsburgh, but one of the biggest components was interviewing different community leaders in different neighborhoods. So we went to Oakland, East Liberty, Lawrenceville, Southside, and we got to interview a lot of the executive directors of community organizations and things like that, and really get a firsthand look at exactly the kind of work that they're doing, mm-hmm. and hopefully the kind of work that we can do once we are done school. So I got to interview Lauren Byrne from Lauren Byrne Connolly now, sorry, from Lawrenceville United. She's the executive director over there and has been for quite a while. And we really just asked her, you know, what her job is like and what kind of issues and challenges she faces in the neighborhood. You know, as you know, Lawrenceville has undergone tremendous amount of change throughout.
And what did she tell you? Yeah, and believe me, I know. And yeah. I've told this story before, but I love telling it so much. When I was a kid, you know, that's where the Washington Vocational School is, which I assume is still up and running over there, or it's changed or you know, been altered somewhat. But that was where, in the Pittsburgh public schools, where they didn't have room for the shop classes. You know, they didn't have welding, and they didn't have, you know, a working kitchen where you could learn home ec and those kinds of things. So, like, the every Thursday afternoon or Thursday morning, they'd stick you on this bus. They called it the WAVO bus, short for Washington Vocational. And we were bused from Highland Park over to Lawrenceville. And you, it was such a working class neighborhood. And as a kid, you know, it made an impression on you that this is a hard scrabble, rough and tumble area of town, unlike, you know, where we were living and growing up. And then to come back and see how it's changed is really amazing. So, Carly, as you made your way through the neighborhood and you talked to community organizers, what were they telling you about the changes and how specifically they were impacting people?
Yeah, there are a lot. One of the biggest things is nightlife and entertainment and bars that basically have come to the neighborhood that have completely changed the face. If you go down Butler Street, you can't go two blocks without hitting a kind of bar or a restaurant. And that was a huge impact.
It wasn't always that way?
Not according to Lauren, no.
What did she say? And how have those changes impacted the residents there?
So parking is always a big issue. Just like crowds and litter and kind of public problems that come with having these kind of...
like if you were living here on the South Side, you know,
right,
the same
exactly.
kind of thing, which they probably didn't deal with as much years ago.
Right. So they really needed buy-in from the residents, the longtime Lawrenceville residents, to be able to have these. So first, anytime a new bar or restaurant would come in, they had a big community meeting. And for all kind of new development in the neighborhood, the community gets to have a say in the process when that planning is happening. And that's what I think Mike was talking about earlier, in that Pittsburgh still has a chance to make the development in the right way, kind of do it correctly. And so we don't have what happened in the Mission District or what happened in San Diego happen here. So having the residents a part of that conversation with developers when the development is happening is a huge, huge step in the right direction. And they also did things like something really unique that Lawrenceville United did was certain specials at restaurants for community members, you know, between the hours of like 3 and 5 p.m. Elderly residents especially would get a special. So they would...
We can give you a plate of pasta that's not going to cost you
$22. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And that helped, you know, establish trust and build relationships with the actual people in the neighborhood to help them, you know, be more okay with all of these big changes that are happening and make them feel welcome in that change, not just that this is just for young people or this mm-hmm. is just for transplants or this is just for, you know, college educated, that crowd. But it's for everyone in the neighborhood to partake in and enjoy. And I think that's what's been really successful with Lawrenceville, and hopefully what can be successful with a lot of the other neighborhoods too.
Okay. Well, Carly, thank you for sharing. You did a lot of work on this, very hard work. And thank you for bringing it to our airwaves and sharing it as part of this conversation with Michael Eichler and Mary Omer from the School of Social Work. We're talking about the play Repulsing the Monkey, and there's going to be a reading this week, and we'll get to the specifics of that before we wrap up. But I want to get back to Michael here. You know, we heard what Carly said about the issues. It's interesting because, you know, I know people in Lawrenceville, one fellow in particular, a friend of mine who bought property, I think a couple of small, you know, row house type places that cost him something like $12,000. And now the value of that has increased more than tenfold. I mean, the dude has made some money. People are making money. This is capitalism. So while we certainly can sympathize, and I'm playing a little devil's advocate here, but while we can sympathize with the residents who are being displaced or can't afford to live somewhere or can't afford to eat, who have to deal with the noise and the traffic and all that comes with the success of a neighbor, of the gentrification of a neighborhood, which, you know, from a business person's standpoint is a successful thing. So why should we care about, you know, who suffers at the expense of capitalism? We've never cared before. Why now?
That's a very good question. If you take a look at some of the changes that are occurring in Pittsburgh, I just heard about this today. There is a school, a vacant, empty school that's been for sale for a while in Hazelwood. And the price of the property was $250,000. A community group came together with a plan and were able to raise the $250,000, which is a substantial amount of money. So it's not a fly-by-night organization with no capacity. They had $250,000. And their plan was to have some veteran services run out of the building, some social services for veterans, and low-income, affordable rent apartments in the school. They offered full price for the property. A high-tech company came along and bid over $1 million for the $250,000 price tag on the building. And the quote was, "We want our employees to be able to bike from CMU in 20 minutes or less, and this is the only building we could find," thus eliminating social service programs for veterans and affordable houses and apartments, for people living in that and growing up in that neighborhood. So I'm a capitalist. I'm in favor of capitalism, but running amok with no balance at all. There are other buildings than that building. If somebody could afford $250,000 for a purpose like that, from a community point of view, that is the highest and best use for that property, but not according to the way policies are done here. Other cities balance this out. They require a developer to have a certain number of units set aside for a loan. There's many ways to blend this and still have capitalism and still have immense profits still made by entrepreneurs and smart people. But if it's left amok, that literally, the one example I gave you is going to happen all over Pittsburgh to the point where the majority of people are not going to be happy with that form of change in the city.
Mary.
And let me just comment on that, because I think that is important for our students to understand that the goal of the work Mike and I did over the years and what they're learning to do, we want to see change. The change makers want to see change. They want their communities revitalized. We had them even interview people in Homewood to Lawrenceville, Southside. And so it's the balance. They talked about, sustainable growth, responsible growth, balanced growth, and the people in the communities having a real voice in that. And so it's difficult and challenging. And I think that is the students are learning that. And when they eventually go out in the field and work on it, we'll realize all the things that need to come together. But this play really offers an opportunity for us to bring change makers, residents, stakeholders from all the neighborhoods together to begin a dialogue across neighborhoods, to begin to share what they're doing, their ideas for change and their struggles, and, you know, raise the bar, hopefully, and maybe prevent and do something more beyond what's happening in the individual neighborhoods, which is, you can see, as in Lawrenceville as an example,
sure.
They are. So
This is called, again, this play is called Repulsing the Monkey, and the author is Michael Eichler. And he is a graduate of the Pitt School of Social Work, a former prof at the San Diego State University, and now a very successful playwright whose work has won awards and accolades. And Repulsing the Monkey will be read as a staged reading at the Pitt School of Social Work on Wednesday and Thursday nights of this week. Where exactly are they going? Because, you know, you go into Oakland, you're looking on the School
All
of
right,
Social Work,
right.
What building, where, what?
It's a little complicated, but it's the Pennsylvania Athletic Club. So if you know where the Cathedral
Learning is,
and you're on 5th, it's
right?
Across the street.
Okay, so is that the PAA?
Yes.
And what time?
7 to 9.
7 to 9. So get there early, find a parking space, and by all means, get in there and hear this, and hopefully we'll see it staged in full. Which I'm guessing is your goal at some point.
That's right. The hope is that there'll be a buzz from this. People will enjoy it. It'll set some conversations and possibly a theater in cooperation maybe with the School of Social Work and with the community organizing program could jointly have a full run of the play in the future.
Michael Eichler and Mary Omer from the School of Social Work at the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we will find out about a Pittsburgh magician who claimed to be the reincarnation of Harry Houdini. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.